bulbs illuminated at intervals down the long corridor. The barrel stood not 10 paces away. Just beyond the barrel, a scrawny, greenish humanoid creature with bat-wing ears sat on a short 3-legged stool. He sprang to his feet and shook a fist.
"Why the light?"
the creature asked with a snarl.
"Is this an emergency?"
Nox slapped off the light and stood frozen. What had he just seen? Some kind of monster. A match flared to life, and then a lantern was glowing. As the scowling creature marched toward them, one hand on the lantern, the other on his hip, Tess slipped behind Nox.
"What's your business down here?"
Nox wondered if he should bolt. Maybe the door was made of iron for good reason. But though the creature looked fearsome, he wasn't very big, and he seemed more disgruntled than enraged. Some kind of guard? Protecting the barrel, probably. If Nox wanted to get into the barrel, it was now or never.
"We're supposed to go to Worm Roost," Nox said.
The creature stopped a pace or two away and held out the lantern toward him.
"Human kids. Not the ones I normally see, though it's hard to tell. You all look so much alike. Why is the little one hiding?"
"I'm not really hiding," Tess said, looking around Nox. "You just look kind of scary."
The creature puffed out his chest.
"You bet I do,"
he snorted and spat.
"First lick of good sense I've heard all day. Not much is more intimidating than a goblin in his prime."
"What's your name?" Tess asked.
"You've never heard of Slaggo?"
the goblin asked.
"You must be new around these parts."
"We're just passing through on our way to Worm Roost," Nox said.
"I had no knowledge of that," Slaggo said. "I'm supposed to watch this barrel. Nobody comes out except the Sorensons. Nobody goes in without a word from Hank or Gloria."
"Hank and Gloria are our grandparents," Nox said. "Who do you think gave us the keys? We're supposed to catch up with Seth and Kendra."
"I just need word from Hank," Slaggo said.
"He's sleeping," Nox said. "He had a hard day."
"Gloria sleeping too?"
Slaggo asked.
"Everybody," Nox said.
"Why are you still up then?"
Slaggo asked.
"Because this is when we were supposed to go to Worm Roost," Nox replied.
"To see the castle,"
Tess chimed in. Slaggo rubbed his bony chin.
"Well, I suppose if you don't belong, they won't let you through on the other side. I don't see what harm a couple of kids could do. I'll need to hold those keys, though. Can't have those going off to some other preserve."
"Sure," Nox said, handing over Dale's key ring. "Can we get going?"
"I suppose,"
Slaggo said, stepping aside.
"I get sick of speaking English. Twists my mouth up in terrible ways."
"You do a good job," Tess said.
"Course I do,"
Slaggo said.
"Been practicing. Who knows why, though? Hideous language. Come along."
Nox hoped the guards on the far side would let him through. With some luck, whoever greeted him would recognize him from his previous visit.
"I better go first," Nox said.
"Suit yourself,"
Slaggo said, waving a dismissive hand.
"I'll be relieved to douse the lantern."
"How will you see?" Tess asked.
"Goblins see best in the dark,"
Slaggo said.
"It varies with other amounts of light. Who needs it?"
"I do," Tess said.
Nox climbed into the barrel. "Tess, after I disappear, get into the barrel and squat down." He squatted down.
"Worm Roost,"
he said, like he had when he had crossed over with Seth. A hand grabbed his shoulder and stood him up. It was another goblin, this one taller, beefier, and more ape-like. Nox was in a new room, the same place he had arrived on his previous visit.
"You again?" the goblin asked. "I don't have word about visitors."
"I'm supposed to see the Sorensons," Nox said. "I'm just following instructions."
The goblin helped him step from the barrel.
"The
That was incredible you got the scepter. We might have been roasted without it.
My little sister is coming too, Nox said. The goblin looked into the barrel.
So she is.
He lifted her out. Tess stared at the goblin with wide eyes.
Thanks,
Nox said.
I need to report your arrival,
the goblin said.
It's my neck on the line if this is some kind of mischief.
Sure, Nox said. At least he had made it here. And this time he could see the goblin for what he was. On his previous visit, the occupants of the castle had all looked like people. What a difference the milk made.
Branwen!
The goblin cried.
We have visitors!
Chapter 11 On the Road. As Kendra made her way along the dirt road winding down from Skyhold, dragons circled high above, shadowy forms with moonlit highlights. Tanu had a flashlight but suggested that the moon provided enough light. He kept refusing to converse, so they walked quickly, using the downhill slope to stay at a brisk pace. The air was chilly but not insufferable, and between the exertion and her coat, Kendra stayed warm. What she most wanted right now was distance from the dragons. They had overtly declared war. No more pretending. How were she and her brother and their few allies supposed to fight dragons? Kendra wanted to be within the walls and barriers of Blackwell Keep. Would simply hiding behind protections be enough to win a war? She supposed it was better than nothing. She felt so exposed. Would standing on the road really shield her from dragon fire? When they heard a clatter behind them, Kendra was so startled she nearly jumped off the road. She, Seth, and Tanu moved to one side to allow the gnome leader, Karzal, to approach in his little chariot pulled by 5 large dogs.
Whoa!
The gnome called, tugging his reins to pull the wolfish canines to a halt.
Nice ride, Seth said.
Not a bad way to travel,
Karzal conceded in English.
I'm sorry about your griffins. It can be a dirty business dealing with dragons.
Is your kingdom far? Kendra asked.
A fair distance,
Karzal said, staring out into the night.
Getting to Skyhold takes considerable planning. I left my kingdom as soon as the invitation arrived to get here on time.
Why not fly? Seth asked.
Karzal winced.
Gnomes were never meant for the skies. Close to the earth for me. I'm sorry this vehicle is insufficient for big folk, or I would gladly offer a ride.
I'm not sure the dragons would smile at that, Kendra said, glancing skyward.
Why should I care?
Karzal asked.
Dragons only smile about gnomes if they are hungry.
Do gnomes use the roads a lot? Kendra asked.
Now and again, Karzal said. These roads provide valued protection for the inhabitants of the 5 territories, particularly when we need to travel beyond our borders.
So nothing can bother us on the road, Kendra said, hoping it was true.
Not until Midsummer Eve, Karzal said. On the festival night, the defenses on the roads fall. Only the defenses around the territories and the keep remain. And, in a pinch, the occasional roadhouse. With only 2 days left, you'll want to hurry.
Unfortunately, we can't use the shorter way to the keep, Kendra said. The bridge is out at Thirsty Gulch.
Really?
Karzal asked.
Then you're heading the same way as me. Careful when the road nears Stormguard Castle. I prefer to pass by there at full speed under broad daylight.
Why?
Seth asked.
You don't know the legend of the cursed castle?
Karzal asked.
No,
Seth said, glancing at Tanu.
You?
The potion master shrugged.
No details.
Nobody has the full story,
Karzal said,
and nobody is likely to learn it. Not often does a thriving castle go silent overnight. Those who investigate either don't get close enough to learn anything, or never return.
This longer road goes by there? Kendra asked.
"'Course it does,' Carzal said. "'Used to be the heart of Wormroost. "'The castle predates the sanctuary.'
"'Did the dragons curse it?' Seth asked.
"'Hard to know for sure,' Carzal said. "'Not likely, though. "'The castle isn't scorched or damaged. "'There was no obvious attack. "'It just fell silent.'
"'How recently?' Kendra asked.
"'Centuries ago,' Carzal said. "'Before my time.'
He looked back up the mountain.
"'I had best be off. You as well. "'Try to make the nearest roadhouse tonight. "'They're spaced regularly. At least you'll have beds. "'Best of luck. I need to inform my people of the latest developments.
"'The gnomes are with you!'
He shook his reins.
"'Yah!'
The dogs scampered quickly to a run, and a little chariot clattered out of view. Kendra, Seth, and Tanu started walking again.
"'Think the gnomes can help much?' Kendra asked. "'Maybe if the dragons get hungry,' Seth said. "'Snacks can be distracting.'
"'What are we going to do about Midsummer Eve?' Kendra said. "'If we're still on the road, we're in trouble.'
"'We'll hope Kreia delivers our message and Blackwell Keep sends aid,' Tanu said. "'If not, it sounds as though these roadhouses might work like safe huts.'
"'I have a map,' Seth said.
"'Me too,' Tanu said. "'We'll check them when we have more light.'
"'What if the dragons try to block us from the safe huts?' Kendra asked.
"'We'll fight our way past them,' Seth said, patting his sword.
"'I wouldn't get too cocky,' Kendra said.
"'It's the potion talking,' Tanu reminded them.
"'I wish we had dog carts,' Seth said. "'Those dogs were fast!'
"'Griffins would be faster,' Kendra said.
A few minutes later they heard hoofbeats approaching from behind. They moved to the side of the road again, and Amulon raced by. The Rumator did not pause or acknowledge them.
"'Too bad Elk Boy won't give us a lift,' Seth said. He seems really fast.
I'm not sure he likes us much, Kendra said.
Course not, Seth said. He isn't shorter than my waist. We need taller allies.
Hey!
Calvin complained from his pocket.
We'll take what we can get, Seth amended.
For now, let's get down the mountain, Tanu said.
Want to tell us about raiding Madrigus? Seth asked.
I want to be farther from Skyhold. Tanu said. Lowering his voice, he continued. It was beautiful, though. The only problem was my limited carrying capacity. I emptied all I could from my pack. Still, imagine being in the richest treasure room in the world. Tons of gold, heaps of jewels, and only your two hands and a pack to carry stuff out. One trip.
He shook his head.
So much was left behind.
"'Not that cooked tear duct,'
Calvin said. His tiny fist knocked against Seth.
"'There can be advantages to short allies.'
"'I was glad to have our little helper,' Tanu said. "'He went places I could not have reached with so little time.'
"'You got good stuff, though?' Seth asked.
"'What I left behind may haunt me forever,' Tanu said. Riches a potion master can only dream about. But I got so much. My pack is stuffed with abundant ingredients I never imagined obtaining. It has been decades since anyone brewed with jellied dragon pancreas.
Can you do much with it now? Kendra asked.
A little, perhaps, Tanu said. Much more if I set up a proper brewing environment.
I wish I could get some of my haul on ice.
Kendra led the way as they continued down the road, walking faster than before. What would it look like when the war officially began? What preparations were needed? They needed more time. The night got slightly warmer as they descended, but the air remained chilly. Moonlit dragons continued to glide above them against a backdrop of bright stars. The road finally leveled out, and then ended at an intersection. "'Right or left?' Kendra asked.
"'This is the outer road,' Tanu said.
"'One of the five main roadways,' Seth added.
"'Right is the quicker way back to the keep,' Tanu said. With the bridge out, I think we need left.
You need help,
a voice called from behind. Kendra turned to find Eve approaching out of the night, trotting quietly.
What are you doing here? Kendra asked.
I gave my father the slip, Eve said.
Listened to his lecture, acted compliant, then ran off while he was making preparations at the stable.
Lord Dalgarel will be furious, Tanu said.
Isn't he looking for you? Seth asked.
Eve smiled and looked at the sky.
He keeps swooping around up there. I just duck off the road when he gets near.
Unwise to leave the road, Tanu said.
I've never had a real adventure, Eve said. I read about so many, always wanted one.
We're in real trouble, Kendra said.
Exactly,
Eve replied.
Not just sneaking pastries from the kitchen or exploring a creaky old windmill. Actual danger.
I understand the itch, Seth said.
Kendra swatted her brother on the shoulder.
You're not helping.
Good to see you,
greeted Calvin from Seth's pocket, his head poking out and one arm waving.
Is that Calvin? Eve asked, leaning forward. How are you?
A little soaked in dragon guts, Calvin said.
Are you sure you should run away?
I can help, Eve said. You're all new here. Are you really going left, past Stormguard Castle?
Until we get aid from Blackwell Keep, Tanu said.
Eve clapped her hands.
How thrilling!
What do you know about it? Seth asked.
So many rumors, Eve said.
The castle was here before Wormroost? Kendra asked.
Long before, Eve said. It was originally a secret domain of the Fairfolk. That's why so many Fairfolk still reside here. Good King Weldon, ruler of the Fairfolk in this part of the world, allowed the founders of Wormroost to create the sanctuary around his ancestral home, and the territory of Terrabel was reserved for the Fairfolk, not of the castle.
But the castle was cursed, Kendra said.
King Hollerix was the last ruler of Stormguard Castle, Eve said. He had three sons, Tregane, Heath, and Lochland. There used to be regular interactions between the citizens of Terrabel and the castle folk. One day the castle went silent. We don't know what happened. We only know that nobody ever came out, and none who have ventured inside ever returned.
Maybe we can ring the doorbell and run, Seth teased.
Kendra wanted to pinch him for never being serious.
I wouldn't risk it, Eve said. Those who do a close examination of the castle do not return.
Sometimes little people can slip in and out of places unnoticed, Calvin suggested.
Not a bad idea, Eve murmured.
Are there any guesses what happened? Kendra asked.
Nothing that really fits, Eve said. There was no visible damage. From one day to the next, the whole castle went quiet.
Maybe a plague? Seth asked.
If so, it acts fast enough that nobody ever returns with information about it, Eve said.
I don't know of any plague that incapacitates so quickly, Tanu said. Some kind of magical curse is the more likely culprit, which means we should stay far away.
How do you beat a curse? Seth asked.
Depends on the curse, Tanu said. A curse that paralyzed or destroyed an entire castle? You don't ask how to beat it. You figure out how to avoid it.
We have enough problems without chasing after curses, Kendra said. This road will take us right by Stormguard Castle, though, Eve said. We'll get closer than we probably should.
A griffin whooshed by not more than 10 feet above their heads. Eve froze and held a finger to her lips as the creature soared up the road. After a moment, it passed out of view.
Your dad?
Seth asked. Eve nodded.
How did he miss us? Seth asked.
He should know he won't find me, Eve said.
Did he go blind? Seth asked. And the griffin, too?
I have a talent,
Eve said quietly.
What do you mean? Kendra asked.
All of the fair folk have a gift, Eve said. at least one, a magical talent.
You can make people blind? Seth asked.
Eve giggled. Almost, sometimes. I can help others see what I want them to see.
What did you make your dad see? Seth asked.
I wasn't focusing on him specifically, Eve said. I was covering us, so we would blend in with the road to any onlookers. Worked on both my father and the griffin.
You never hit off the side of the road to avoid your dad, Seth accused.
No, Eve said. Griffins are too fast and quiet. How would I have known when he was coming?
How long can you hide us? Kendra asked.
For a while, Eve said. I get fatigued. It's like running a long distance. The longer you go, the more tired you get. After long enough, I get worn out. And the more appearances I try to alter, the quicker I tire.
Can you make me look like a bear? Seth asked.
Yes, Eve said. Until somebody studied you closely. My gift works best when the things I disguise are only half noticed, blending in with the background. A bear might not be a smart choice, because if somebody glimpses a bear, they will probably focus on the bear.
And if they focus on the bear, your illusion fails, Kendra said.
Exactly, Eve said. I try not to explain my gift very often. It is less effective when people know what I can do. But since we're adventuring together...
And since we caught you using it, Seth interjected. What did we look like to your dad?
I made us match the color and texture of the road, Eve said. Like chameleons. I'm still doing it because eventually he will come back. There are limits to how far you could have traveled since leaving the feast. When he fails to find you on the road, Father will suspect I am concealing you. He'll keep after us.
Is it wise for you to come with us? Tanu asked. We may well get caught on the road for Midsummer Eve.
If it comes to that, we'll take cover in a roadhouse, Eve said.
Will a roadhouse stand against a festival night? Tanu asked.
It should hold if travelers are inside, Eve said.
Against dragons? Kendra asked.
In theory, Eve said. The road defenses will go down, but the roadhouses should stay protected.
Hopefully we'll receive aid before then, Tanu said.
How often will we find roadhouses? Seth asked.
There is roughly a day's walk between them, Eve replied.
They marched forward in silence for a time. Kendra watched the moon sinking toward the mountaintops. The ghostly forms of dragons continued to drift high above, distant enough to almost feel irrelevant. After some time, the griffin came zooming up the road again, straight toward them, flying not more than 15 feet off the ground. Kendra and the others held still as the creature whooshed by not far overhead. Before long, it was gone again.
Your dad is persistent, Seth said.
So am I, Eve replied.
I'll vouch for that, Calvin said. And Terrabell, she was relentless until I waded in that custard.
Unsettling sounds issued from the darkness at either side of the road, foliage rustling, branches snapping, along with occasional growls or strange cries. Kendra kept walking, trying to trust the protective barrier that isolated the road from the rest of Wormroost. In the distance, a chorus of distant howling rose to frantic shrieks and cackles.
What was that?
Kendra whispered.
Best not to think about it, Tanu said.
What?
Seth pressed.
I know that sound, Tanu said. Werewolves.
People who turn into wolves? Seth asked.
Many werewolves end up surrendering their humanity, Tanu said. Human form becomes a rare state, and even in human shape, they behave like beasts.
There is a problem with these creatures at Wormroost, Eve said, especially in the backcountry. Were-boars, were-lynxes, werewolves.
Were they making a kill? Seth asked.
Sounded like it, Tanu said. Notice how they have gone quiet now?
Are they eating?
Seth asked. The calm suddenly seemed more sinister than the noise.
Can we change the topic? Kendra asked.
Sorry,
Tanu said, eyes searching heavenward.
Beautiful stars tonight.
Hard to look up without seeing dragons, Kendra said. Can they see us while we're camouflaged?
If they have been following you since Skyhold, my deceptions won't work, Eve said. If they stop watching, though, it may be a little tricky for them to find us again. I'll do my best.
Seth leaned closer to Kendra and lowered his voice.
You have to admit, she could be handy.
We don't want the fair folk to hate us, though, Kendra said. They clearly don't want her involved with us.
Don't worry, Seth said brightly. They're always neutral.
The moon had set behind the mountains by the time the roadhouse came into view. A squat building made of fitted stones with a slate roof slanting down from a single chimney. It wasn't much more than a cottage. Although it wasn't their final destination, Kendra felt a sense of relief wash over her. The solid front door was unlocked, and after Tanu lit a little lamp, Kendra was surprised by how tidy it looked inside. The wood floor was clean, if not polished. The glass-paned windows had curtains, and a full wood box awaited by the fireplace. She observed no cobwebs and no dust, and she counted 6 cots, 2 rocking chairs, and a table with 4 chairs.
"Should we light a fire?" Tanu asked. "I don't think our presence is a big secret."
"Not to my father," Eve said, picking up a note from the table and waving it.
"What does it say?"
Seth asked. "That he will come for me in the morning," Eve said. "I bet he went to deliver news to Terrabel. He'll be back."
Tanu started positioning logs in the fireplace.
"We need to get some sleep. Lots of ground to cover in the next couple of days."
"I won't leave you," Eve said resolutely, setting the paper down. Seth flopped onto a cot.
"Can he drag you onto a griffin?"
"I guess we'll find out," Eve said, bolting the door. "Want me to take the first watch?"
"We should be safe here," Tanu said. "Let's all sleep."
He poured some powder on the logs in the fireplace and struck a match, and a fire blazed to life. Kendra took off her shoes, peeled back some covers, and stretched out on a cot. The war against the dragons would start tomorrow.
What might that look like?
2 nights from now would be Midsummer Eve. That would be pandemonium, a total nightmare. The dragons supposedly had a way to win the war. Kendra and her friends had a lot to figure out. Was it too much to hope that somebody besides her would uncover the solution? So many uncertainties. And it was late. Kendra was exhausted. Now that she was at rest, she seemed to be melting away. Her fatigue gave way to dreamless sleep.
Chapter 12. Stranded. As Brunwyn led Nox and Tess through Blackwell Keep, Nox tried to look in all directions at once. There were dwarfs, and a snake lady with 6 arms, and torches and oil lamps instead of electric lights, and towers and battlements, not to mention that he was following a big, shaggy minotaur.
"Are there really dragons here?"
Tess asked breathlessly.
"You don't want to see any of them," Brunwyn said. "They'll freeze you right to the bone."
"You're Brunwyn," Nox said. "The same person who helped me out of the barrel last time?"
"Correct,"
the minotaur said.
"You look cooler now," Nox said.
"I looked human to you before?"
Brunwyn asked.
"Yes," Nox said.
"Then of course I look better now,"
Brunwyn said with a sniff.
"I never met a cowman," Tess said.
Nox did not manage to completely stifle his laugh.
"Bullman,"
Brunwyn said, miffed.
"Minotaur, preferably. The women are cow women, I suppose, but I would avoid that language."
Nox followed Brunwyn down a hall and into a room, where they found Stan and Ruth Sorensen talking to an elderly Asian man. A large bird of prey perched on the headboard of the bed in the room. Stan turned to Nox in astonishment.
"Am I dreaming? What are you doing here? And Tess?"
"We came to see the dragons," Tess said.
"And how did you know to do that?" Ruth asked.
"She can see the fairies," Nox said, "without the milk. She can see all of it. I finally drank some."
"Drinking milk does not get you to Worm Roost," Stan said.
"It takes a barrel," Nox said. "You know, I came here before."
"Does your Grandma Larson know you're here?" Ruth asked.
"Nobody knows," Nox said. "Where are Seth and Kendra?"
"That was our present topic," the large bird said.
"This is Kreia the Eagle," Ruth said.
"And Marat, former caretaker of Worm Roost."
Marat gave a small bow.
"The eagle can talk," Tess said.
"Kreia is a representative from a territory of talking animals," Ruth explained.
"Kendra and Seth have found themselves in danger before," Stan said. "But this time, they're at a dragon sanctuary, where anarchy may soon reign."
"Why don't they just come home?"
Tess inquired innocently.
"They can't. At least not the same way they left," Stan said. "They had a meeting with the dragons, and their rides were slain. The roads offer protection from dragons, but those protections fail in less than 2 days, when the sun goes down on Midsummer Eve."
"The roadhouses would provide refuge," Marat inserted.
"I don't like it," Stan said, folding his arms.
"We need to get them home before the solstice."
"We can release griffins," Marat said.
"But under the circumstances, the dragons may not permit the griffins to arrive. We could also release some of the Luvians on the road."
"Luvians?" Tess asked.
"Really smart horses," Ruth explained. "Fast and strong, too."
"What if the griffins flew low?" Stan asked. "Followed the road?"
"The protection only fully holds if they stay on the road," Marat said.
"If dragons chose to harass them, the griffins would have to run to Kendra and Seth. Over long distances, they would probably be slower than the Luvians."
"Can I help?" Nox asked. "Last time, none of the dragons could attack me."
"Now you have drunk the milk," Stan said, "and you know what is really going on here. It was your complete obliviousness that protected you last time."
"Are there really dragons?" Nox asked.
"You have no idea," Stan said,
sober eyes meeting Nox's gaze.
"He's a dragon," Ruth said, indicating Marat.
"In human form," Marat explained.
"You can turn into a dragon?"
Nox asked incredulously. Marat gave a nod that included a partial bow.
"Do it!"
Tess said, clapping her hands and bouncing.
"Enough!"
Stan interrupted, closer to a yell than Nox had ever heard from him.
"Kendra and Seth may not make it back alive. This is not a game. The dragons have declared war."
The room was silent. Taking a step closer to Nox, Tess grabbed Nox's hand.
"Start the Luvians running," Stan said. "The ones that carried Kendra and Seth before, and maybe two others."
"Shall we dispatch Henrik as well?" Marat asked.
"Tell him to follow his best judgment," Stan said.
Marat exited the room. Stan turned his attention to Nox. His expression was grim.
"How did you kids get here without anyone noticing?" Stan asked. "I thought Hank put the barrel in the dungeon."
"I may have swiped Dale's key," Nox said.
Stan blanched.
"Nobody knew you went to the dungeon? How did you lock the door?"
Suddenly, Nox felt worried he might have done something very wrong.
"I left the key with Slago."
Stan closed his eyes. Nox saw him struggle against anger.
"The goblins are not given keys. The goblins are not trustworthy."
"We need to get to the barrel,"
Ruth said, urgency in her tone.
"Yes, we should,"
Stan said, hustling out the door.
Brunwyn, with us,
Ruth said to the Minotaur, waiting outside the room. Nox and Tess followed Brunwyn back through halls and downstairs until they reached the room with the barrel. Stan and Ruth stood in shock. The barrel was gone. The ape-like goblin lay sprawled on the floor in a pool of dark blood. Tess shrieked. Ruth quickly walked her out of the room, talking soothingly. Bovine nostrils flaring, Brunwyn knelt and checked the body.
Dead.
Stan was quivering, lips pressed tightly, hands balled into fists. He glanced at Nox.
I'm sorry, Nox blurted. What happened?
Hard to be sure, Stan said tightly. Brunwyn, we need to find that barrel. Until we do, our security is compromised.
Brandishing a huge axe, the Minotaur rushed away.
Did Slago come through? Nox asked.
Almost certainly not Slago, Stan said. He would be no match for this goblin. But Slago had Dale's keys, and a dungeon full of options. Many things could have come through.
I'm sorry,
Nox said, a sick feeling stewing in his gut.
You didn't know, Stan said. I'm sure nobody explained the stakes to you. We're in the middle of a war against the dragons. If they win, it could mean the end of the world.
Not the whole world, Nox said. We have guns, tanks, bombs.
Humanity would put up a fight, Stan said, but the dragons have magic. Think we should chance it?
No, Nox said.
There are people who want the sanctuaries to fall, Stan said. People and beings who want to destroy this fortress. And now they may have a way in.
What should I do?
Nox asked, trying to keep his voice steady. He almost wished Stan would spank him. Hard. It would match how he felt inside.
You can't go back to Fablehaven, Stan said. Not until we find that barrel and make sure the other end is uncompromised as well.
I'm stuck here?
For now. We'll need to somehow get word to your grandma and Grandpa Larson. They will be worried. And we need to place the keep on high alert. Come with me.
Nox followed Stan into the hall, where Ruth stood hugging Tess. Stan patted Tess on the back. She looked up at him.
Who hurt the monster? She asked.
We need to figure that out, Stan said. Probably something showed up in the barrel, and the goblin made the mistake of touching it. Ruth, take the kids to the satyrs. Then help me alert everyone.
The satyrs? Ruth questioned.
Do you have a better idea? Stan asked. We know Newell and Doran are on our side. They're clever enough to sense danger and typically stay far away from it.
Ruth nodded.
I agree, but mostly because I can't think of anyone else.
Stan patted her arm.
Keep an eye out for intruders.
Stan hurried away. Ruth walked Nox and Tess out a door and across a courtyard. They entered a hall, and Ruth knocked on a door. A satyr answered, horns on his head, wearing a loose vest over a bare chest, his bottom half supported by two goat legs.
Ruth, good evening.
Nox?
What's he doing here?
Are you one of the goats that came with us in the woods?
Nox asked.
You finally drank the milk,
the satyr said. I'm Newell. My friend Doran was the other goat.
Doran came to the door.
Hello.
We have a problem, Ruth said.
We know about Kendra and Seth, Newell said. We were at the stables when Marat came to get the Luvians.
That was recent, Ruth said. You came straight back here?
We wanted to gear up, Doran said. See if we can help.
Did you see anyone strange? Ruth asked. Anyone with a barrel?
Did something happen to the barrel?
Newell asked.
It's gone,
Ruth said. The goblin who was guarding it is...
I know already,
Tess said with a shiver.
He looked pretty dead to me.
This is serious,
Newell said.
Dire,
Ruth said. If access to the keep is open, we could all be in major trouble. And the dragons just declared war.
What can we do?
Doran asked. Watch the kids, Ruth said. Keep them safe, and keep an eye out for anyone who does not belong. Newell saluted.
We're on the job!
You kids be good, Ruth said, and she bustled away. You guys are part goat? Tess asked.
Only the best parts, Doran said.
You know what goat stands for, right?
Newell asked.
Greatest of all time!
Can I pet you? Tess asked.
Ordinarily, no, Doran said. For you, I'll make an exception.
He stuck out a leg, and Tess ruffled the fur on his outer thigh.
Not very soft, Tess said.
We're part goat, not part llama,
Newell replied. So you looked like this the whole time we went to the bear? Knox asked.
Yes,
Newell said.
Goat guys. And the bear was an ogre.
Welcome to a stranger world than the one you knew.
Strange is right,
Knox said. He looked around.
What now?
Come inside, Newell said, stepping back from the door.
We can get you some snacks.
Knox entered, followed by Tess. Newell shut the door.
Do you like cheese fondue? Doran asked. I improvised some. Not bad.
Melted cheese sounds good, Knox said.
We don't have television, Newell said. We found some books, but they're thick ones, and we haven't gotten that desperate yet.
Do you think Kendra and Seth will be all right? Knox asked.
They have survived their share of scrapes, Doran said. This one could be a doozy, though.
Doran and I were just scheming about how we might help,
Newell said.
We were getting ready to go see somebody.
You go, Doran said. I'll watch the young ones. Stuff them full of cheese.
Tess yawned.
I'm sleepy.
You can rest, Doran said. Take my bed.
Cheese first, Tess said.
She has her priorities straight, Newell said. See you soon.
He exited the room, closing the door behind him. Doran went and locked the door.
Just in case, he said.
Is somebody going to attack us? Tess asked.
Probably not, Doran said, his smile a bit forced. Still a good habit, though.
He winked at Knox. Knox was not very comforted.
Chapter 13. Roadblock. Seth awoke to find a little mouse doing push-ups on the floor beside his bed. Seth squeezed some magical walrus butter from the tube he kept with him and took a taste. The mouse became a tiny figure. Seth watched as Calvin leaped to his feet, dashed across the floor to touch one of Seth's shoes, then sprinted to the other shoe, slapped it, and raced back to a midpoint between the footwear to drop for more push-ups.
You're up early,
Seth said quietly. Calvin sprang to his feet and saluted.
You're up last! The others just stepped outside.
Seth looked around. The other cots were made up and the roadhouse was empty. Charred logs fumed in the fireplace.
Did Lord Dalgarel show up?
Seth asked.
No,
Calvin said.
Eve sounded a little worried.
Seth paused at the mention of Eve. He had been a little goofy last night. Had he kissed her hand? What had he been thinking? They were both kids. Nonsense like that was only for the most embarrassing of adults. Must have been the potion. Hopefully she thought he was joking around. His attention returned to Calvin. Do you exercise every morning?
You don't become a champion by relaxing,
Calvin said.
I spent a lot of yesterday in pockets.
Sorry, Seth said. That must get old.
Are you kidding? I went to a dragon castle. I saw dragons duel.
Always good to count our blessings, Seth said.
He got out of bed and put on his shoes.
Lots of walking today. Can you keep up on the ground?
I bet I could,
Calvin said.
I'm fast, but I'd rather stay close to you.
Seth placed him in a pocket and walked out the door. Tanu, Kendra, and Eve stood together eating cookies.
"Who brought cookies?" Seth exclaimed.
They turned to him.
"The roadhouse had a stash," Tanu said.
"Trying to gobble them down without me?" Seth asked. "There are plenty," Kendra said. "They're probably not what you're picturing."
"What do you mean?"
Seth asked.
"They taste healthy," Eve said.
Seth groaned.
"Let me try one."
Kendra handed him a cookie, and he studied it. The treat looked suspiciously earthy. He could see little grains and nuts.
"Are those weeds in it?"
"Just try it," Kendra said. Seth took a bite. It tasted bland and mealy. He chewed dutifully.
"Gross. I need water."
Tanu passed him a flask. Seth guzzled some down.
"It's like concentrated oatmeal," Seth said. "I feel it expanding inside of me."
"Can I try a bite?"
Calvin asked.
"You can have all of it,"
Seth said, sliding the rest of the cookie into his pocket.
"You should eat," Tanu said. "We have a long way to go. All I have are raw dragon parts. I dumped all the rest I could dump."
Seth glanced at the pack. He could see where wetness was seeping through the material in places.
"How are the parts holding up?"
"Getting squishy," Tanu said. "Dragon parts spoil slowly. Still, I'd love to get them on ice."
"Not bad,"
Calvin said, munching the cookie.
"Nutritious, with a hint of honey."
"A very subtle hint that only you noticed," Seth said.
"Functional food,"
Calvin said.
"It will keep us energized and alive."
"Who wants to survive if life tastes like that?" Seth asked.
"Spoken like a kid who has never truly starved," Tanu said.
He handed Seth another cookie.
"Finish that one."
"Then give me more water," Seth said. "I won't have any spit left after two bites." "I snuck some food from the feast," Eve said. "I was planning to come with you once I heard what happened. Made a few sandwiches out of bread and meat."
"Yes, please,"
Seth said, handing the cookie back to Tanu. Eve gave him a sandwich.
"Now that Seth is awake, we should walk as we eat," Tanu said.
"Do we have any chance of making it to Blackwell Keep by Midsummer Eve on foot?"
Seth asked.
Tanu scowled. "Not as we are. Maybe if I brewed a fleetness potion."
"Can you?"
Kendra asked.
"Improvising with dragon parts, probably," Tanu said. "But without some of my gear, it would likely take most of the day, and I can't guarantee it will work."
"We have less than 2 days until Midsummer Eve," Kendra said.
"Let's make it to the next roadhouse," Tanu said. "I want to get farther away from Skyhold."
Seth looked back. The mountain castle remained in plain view. Multiple dragons glided high overhead.
"Can you cloak us?" Seth asked Eve. "I could try," Eve said. "If we walk back inside and then come out already disguised, that gives us the best chance to slip away."
They re-entered the roadhouse and waited for a moment.
"Seth, you didn't make your cot," Kendra scolded. "I'm keeping the brownies employed," Seth said. "Does this place have brownies?" Kendra asked.
"Probably a skeleton crew," Tanu said. "At least part-time. It is too remote to be so tidy otherwise."
"Let's go," Eve said, leading the way out the door. "I don't see any difference in us," Seth said. "I'm not wasting my energy concealing us from one another," Eve said. "Only from external bystanders. Come on."
It was a bright morning, the sun already having crested the eastern peaks. The road wound along the base of Forbidding Mountains. Several large dragonflies hovered and darted near the road, their spindly bodies glossed in iridescent greens, blues, and purples.
"Think you could ride one of those, tiny hero?" Seth asked.
"I might be a little heavy for them," Calvin said. "Maybe I could use one to glide from a high place to a low place."
"I bet the big ones could take you anywhere you wanted to go," Seth said.
"Dragonflies are really hard to catch and not very smart," Calvin said. "I work better with animal brains."
Still no sign of your dad, Kendra said to Eve.
I'm worried about him, Eve said.
I bet the dragons don't want anyone near us, Tanu said. It might explain why we haven't seen any griffins from Blackwell Keep either.
They need to send Tempest, Seth said. She could make it through.
Maybe they will, Kendra said.
Maybe they have, Tanu added. We need to plan like there will be no rescue. We may have to save ourselves.
At least no dragons are right above us anymore, Kendra observed. Our camouflage might be working.
It's not a coincidence, Eve said.
I'll hold our disguise as long as I can.
The sun climbed. The day grew warm. Seth tied the sleeves of his coat around his waist. His fleet boots that Grippa the Troll had recommended kept his feet incredibly comfortable. Walking at the current pace felt like no trouble at all, even though Tanu was gently panting. Seth could not help wondering what top speed he could reach in them and what pace he could sustain.
"We have company," Tanu said.
Glancing to his right, Seth saw a trio of two-headed wolves come running out of the trees toward the road. He instinctively flinched away as one of the wolves collided with the unseen barrier at the edge of the road. After some barks and snarls, the wolves contented themselves with running alongside the travelers, sometimes racing ahead or behind. Their heads were as high as Seth's chest. Soon, a fourth and fifth wolf joined them.
"Dread wolves," Tanu said. "Stay toward the center of the road, and be glad for the magical barrier. Those two heads coordinate well, attacking very effectively. While one is distracting, the other is drawing blood. Occasionally I've seen some with three heads."
Seth heard them making little growls and barks as they dashed along the roadside. Now and then one would snarl, showing vicious teeth.
"I guess our disguises don't work on them," Kendra said.
"No," Eve said. "It is hardest for me to confuse creatures that hunt by smell."
"Looks like a couple of dragons are directly overhead again," Tanu said. "The dread wolves led them back to us."
"Then I'm dropping our disguises," Eve said. "I'm already overtaxed. I'll save my talent for an emergency."
The sun climbed higher, and the dread wolves eventually stopped accompanying them. Seth studied the surrounding trees and rocks, wondering how far away the canines had actually gone. When the sun was directly overhead, Tanu paused and looked up, shielding his eyes.
"Midday," he said. "Somewhere the war has begun."
"I think this war has been underway for a while," Kendra said. "Celebrant just made it official."
"Sure felt like a war at Soaring Cliffs," Tanu said.
"Won't be a war for the fair folk," Seth said, glancing at Eve.
"War is always war," Eve said. "We'll interact with it differently. It could still lead to our destruction."
"Then why not fight?" Seth said.
"I'm not in charge," Eve said.
"Would you fight if you were in charge?" Seth asked.
"Would I send my whole people to war?" Eve asked. "That's a big choice. I'd have to make sure I fully understood the whole story, all aspects. Would I go to war personally? I'm here, aren't I? I'm not supposed to be."
"Could you get your people in trouble?" Kendra asked.
"Father warned he might have to disavow me if I helped you guys," Eve said. "I can live with that."
"Can you?" Tanu asked. "They are your people."
"They live in one little territory on a closed sanctuary," Eve said. "If exile means I get to explore the world, give me exile."
"You're brave," Seth said.
"Are you just barely picking up on that?" Eve asked.
"Sometimes leaving your people to explore new lands is necessary," Calvin said.
"You're brave too, Calvin," Seth assured him.
"Are there fair folk elsewhere?" Kendra asked.
"There are a few other populations around the globe," Eve said. "The group of us here at Wormroost is not the largest."
"Where are they?" Seth asked.
"That is not my secret to tell," Eve said.
They continued along the dusty road for another hour. As they came around a bend,
they found several Rumitors waiting, Amulon at the front, his impressive antlers reaching high above his head. Most of the other Rumitors had no horns, a couple of them were women. A few Alcitors were also with them, reminding Seth of Hendrik, as well as some smaller servitors and a centaur. In total, at least 20 Taurans confronted them, blocking the width of the road several ranks deep. All bore weapons, ranging from spears to bows to clubs to axes, and they had large shields. Amulon carried a mighty mace.
"Greetings, caretakers," Amulon said. "This road leads to the Herdlands and is closed to you. Kindly leave the road at once."
"We're not anywhere near the Herdlands," Eve complained.
"Nevertheless, you are no longer permitted on this road," Amulon said. "Please do not compel us to use force."
An Alcitor led several Taurans off the road. They loped past Seth and his companions and lined up behind them, blocking any retreat along the road.
"You sided with the dragons," Kendra accused.
"I sided against interference from humans on our preserve," Amulon said. "Being watched over by novice children was the final insult."
"Friend," Tanu began with a smile, "if you run us off the road, we will be killed."
"Dragon sanctuaries are perilous," Amulon said grimly. "Those who cannot survive here should not visit, let alone pretend to lead."
"You're giving us a death penalty," Kendra said.
"I'm closing the road to you," Amulon said. "What happens beyond that is none of my affair. I wish you good fortune."
"What did the dragons offer you?" Eve asked.
"Does it matter?" Amulon said. "I struck a bargain with the caretaker I most respect."
"My father will not be pleased about this," Eve said.
"Who fears the displeasure of Dalgarel the Undecided?" Amulon asked. "It's time for this sanctuary to service beings savvy enough to survive here. You were foolish to leave home, daughter of Dalgarel. Another overindulged child with delusions of grandeur."
"This is an act of war," Tanu said.
"This is a time of war," Amulon replied.
"War between you and the caretakers," Tanu said. "You will lose your territory."
"War between the Taurans and the human caretakers," Amulon said. "I stand with Celebrant and the dragons."
"Then get off our road," Kendra ordered.
"We have as much right to this road as you do," Amulon said. "By tradition, by proximity to the Herdlands, and by Celebrant's authority."
Seth drew his sword. Nobody seemed to notice. He wondered how Amulon would handle the bolt of lightning. Would it electrocute some of the other nearby Taurans? The rest would surely attack.
"Off the road,"
Amulon said, stepping forward, leading with his shield.
"What gives us the best chance?" Seth asked. "Taurans, we're leaving the road."
The back row of Taurans knocked arrows.
"What about your bow, Kendra?" Seth asked.
"They have bows too," Kendra replied, "and big shields. And they are ahead and behind, and we have no armor."
"Forward!"
Amulon called, increasing his pace and swinging his mace. Hoofbeats rumbled from ahead and behind. Almost involuntarily, Seth scampered off the road, away from the charge. The others moved with him. Seth studied the foliage. What if the dread wolves were nearby? Or some dragons? Kendra looked panicked. The fear made sense. They were exposed. Amulon and the Taurans lined up along the near edge of the road.
"You are no longer welcome on the road. We will defend it to the death. Find your own way."
He raised his mace high.
"Warning shots!"
As Amulon lowered his mace, arrows hissed from bows, thudding into the ground in front of Seth and the others. One landed hardly a step away from Seth's foot.
"Be gone!"
Amulon commanded.
"They're all facing the same direction now," Kendra said, unslinging her bow and pulling back the empty string.
Seth looked from her bow to the Taurens. Did she have the